All right, and welcome everyone to episode 8 of Virtually Relevant. Man, sometimes it's hard to say, isn't it?
I'm Eric.
I'm Josh.
And this is Kevin. All right, so first, starting up in VR news, one thing that I want to get through real quick is Canon and a new company called Lynx have announced some pass-through VR AR headset combos that we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive in for our next podcast. So that will be very interesting, looking at the tech of that. But so moving right along into it, first thing we're kind of looking at is on one of the new Oculus Quest updates for hand tracking on the Quest is now on default. I'm sure Eric is very happy about this one. So
I'm extremely happy about this one. It was a real hassle before. Every time you turned on the headset, you had to go in and toggle it on. And then if you touched any button, including the grip button on a controller, it immediately deactivated it. So half the time I was deactivating it in the process of setting down the hand trackers after activating it. So I'd have to do it two or three times. The fact I can just set it down, wait a second, look at my hands, and then my hands are there is fantastic. I actually wish they would let you mix a little bit more. You know, see your hands reaching out and grabbing the hand tracker would be fantastic. But I've spent the past two or three weeks doing development work using the hand tracking on the Quest. So the fact that that process has gotten a little bit easier makes me very happy. It's definitely pretty good. It's better than I gave it credit for initially. There's a lot of little quirks and refinements that are needed to make it really super usable, but it works well enough that I'm very happy building on top of it for the applications that we're doing in-house at NetEdge VR.
If you just jump into the headset, since it's on by default, like how long does it take before you see your hands and start using them?
You have to set down the trackers, and if the trackers are not moving for, I'd give it 2 or 3 seconds, and then your hands are visible in frame, then they'll pop in. So under 5 seconds, but I wish it were a little snappier, but it's fine.
And since you're doing dev work, like in a custom-made experience, if you are reliant on hand tracking, is it quicker?
Once it is switched to hand tracking mode, it's almost instant. It just has to do that initial jump into hand tracking mode. But once you're there, I mean, if I'm in hand tracking mode and I launch the app, my hands are there immediately. There's very low latency. I mean, there's just a tiny, tiny touch of hesitation there, but I mean, you stop noticing it fairly quickly. If your hands get out of frame and come back in, there's a little maybe quarter second, half second pop. But for the most part, solid. Actually, a thing that I have discovered accidentally while doing development work is that although it won't display your hands by default outside of a certain range, it is still doing its best guess on them even outside of that range. So, for example, I was triggering off the pinch event that they use for a lot of things, and I'd have my hand hanging down by my side, and just my finger and my index finger and thumb would naturally come together or come close, and I would be firing pinch events down by my waist, not even looking at my hands. So you actually have to go out of your way to ignore that sort of thing. Or when your hands cross in front of each other, it stops displaying them. But if you ask the SDK, is, you know, for the positions of all the bones and so on, it'll still give you their best guess, just with a lower confidence, which is extremely handy for a number of things. It means if you rolled your own mesh around it and didn't rely on their default, that you could actually go ahead and try to display things even in situations where Oculus does not.
How would you say it compares to using Leap Motion? Did you do dev work on Leap Motion at all?
I did some. It is significantly better. Both there's pros and cons. Here's the trade-offs they made. They trained up their modeling by running a bunch of people through, you know, various hand related tasks, and they developed a database of plausible hand poses and the transitions between them, which means you don't get that weirdness you would sometimes get in Leap Motion, which did improve over time. It still happened occasionally, where your hand jumps into some extremely exotic and unlikely position, or it will jump from one pose to another pose that really couldn't have naturally flowed from one to the other. The downside of this is if you try to do anything unusual or exotic, it will guess the nearest plausible pose. So if I'm just stretching my hand out and kind of wiggling my fingers, that works perfectly. If I try to do a Vulcan salute, it won't. It assumes it's an error. So
coming soon to a studio near you, Eric's exotic hand poses.
But the cool thing is, and I'll give them a lot of credit for this, they've got sort of layers to the SDK. And if you interact with the top layer of it, everything is very easy, but is limited in those ways. But they do let you dig down, you know, a couple of layers deeper. And if you're willing to, you know, put in the effort to write your own handlers for it, you can actually handle ambiguous cases differently. In fact, I've had to write my own pinch tracking because I didn't like their pinch tracking is a little trigger happy. If your index finger and thumb get, frankly, anywhere close to each other, it starts firing pinch events, which is not what I want. So, but I was totally able to dig down and write my own handler using the underlying data.
There's so many puns in there with the handler.
I know.
So another question I had was, I remember when we did The Void with Star Wars, used the Leap Motion tracking for hands.
Yeah.
And I noticed that when you're in tight quarters and you have a bunch of people using Leap Motion, you tend to like steal hands a lot. If that makes sense. Like you know, so your hand would get close to my tracker and my tracker would determine that your hand is all of a sudden now my hand.
And right.
So it would start to try to associate it with my experience. Have you played around with hand stealing with the quest?
We have indeed. I had someone stand near me and have them sneak a third hand in there, or have, you know, taken one of my hands out and stuffed one of their hands in there. If it sees three hands in close proximity, it just it turns off hand tracking, at least visibly. If I hide one hand and have someone else's hand come in, it will pretend that other hand belongs to me. If I put in a right hand and someone else puts in a right hand, it knows that's not good, and it turns it off. It very much defaults to, if I am suspicious, I don't know what's going on, just don't show anything, which is, I don't know, either positive or negative. It means you don't end up with a lot of weird things, but it also means that in ambiguous cases that you should normally be able to salvage things, it tends to kind of run to safety fairly aggressively.
So maybe as the analytics are collected and the edge cases are better known, that the software will mature, much like Leap Motion went from something that was a device to actually something that was usable through some very ingenious firmware updates.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember the Orion update on the Leap Motion was what tipped it from unusable to actually decently usable. In my book, I'm very much hoping that Oculus does the same. That, I mean, for example, you know, as I said, if one hand crosses in front of another or touches another, it stops tracking. That seems like stuff that you could solve in software. So I'm hopeful that this will improve, but it is already good enough to take a first crack at things. Now, there aren't a ton of people that are messing with it, so there's not a lot of support online if you're chasing down this path. I was looking for things like, you know, logic to determine how straight any given finger is, and I ended up finding good code on a Japanese website. You know, I mean, you're kind of having to dig deep. But it's exciting. It's fun. Everybody that I've run through the demo that I've got, and I'll bring it out to, you know, the coffee chat and the meetup. There's something joyful about reaching out and creating things and building things in the real world with your hands without having hand trackers at all. When it works well, it is magical. When it doesn't work well, it is frustrating. But I'm learning a lot of techniques for making it less frustrating, and maybe eventually we'll toss out some best practices.
I wonder if the turning off the hand tracking because there's multiple hands in play that is maybe a bandwidth issue, or like it can't process enough data tracking that many hands at once. Because I had the thought that it would be kind of cool to have an asymmetric gameplay where you have one guy or girl in a headset and then a bunch of people like playing whack-a-mole or something, and everybody's kind of jumping in to help this, you know, keep talking, nobody explodes kind of gameplay with one person in a headset and a bunch of people out of a headset.
I think it would be, I am really excited about the potential for mixed reality work and interacting with the real world with the Quest. One of the first things that we did when, you know, because I've got with my current stuff, you're able to kind of construct surfaces and so on just by tracing them out. One of the first things I did was start tracing out furniture so that I could walk over and sit down. And it had a very void feel to it. I mean, I could see things in VR and I could really interact with them. I mean, it doesn't work for things you can pick up and move, but things that are static, like a chair or a desk or a bed or a coffee table, you can absolutely do that. And the cool thing is you can trace them out. And then, for example, you can lay controls on them and you can actually be tapping a solid surface to get that tactile feedback when you're using a control.
Yeah, that would certainly be pretty interesting. And also, Josh, for you, I don't think, or I wouldn't, to me, it doesn't feel like it's a bandwidth issue or something like that. To me, that's kind of Oculus's just way that they go about dealing with stuff. Is it seems like if they kind of put a low pass filter on it, and it's like if something isn't quite up to snuff, then it just kind of turns everything off. You know, especially it kind of makes me think, Eric, of when we were messing around with the two cameras in the very beginning, back when the CV1 launched.
Yeah.
We found out that, you know, even though it had completely rock solid tracking out to 11 feet, after you went, you know, 11 feet and 2 inches, the tracking would just cut off. Right. Even though it was like rock solid tracking out that far from the camera, it was kind of weird.
That does seem to be their philosophy. They would rather have no experience than a degraded experience, and that seems to be the way they're tending. But I'm hopeful that as they, you know, throw more time and effort, and they've got real world metrics coming in on use, that we'll see better things. It's definitely an indication that they're feeling more confident that they've turned it on by default. Although to discover it, you would have to set down the hand trackers and then look at your hands, which is unlikely to happen accidentally, but still, the fact that they're making it that easy to jump in is promising.
So given that these new features are starting to become default, right, like the link and the hand tracking.
Yeah.
A little prognostication. Do you guys think that the Quest will get an in-place upgrade to the Snapdragon XR2 or something like that? Or do you think we're going to have to wait to a whole new revision?
I'm hoping for a mid-cycle replacement, same as they did for the Rift. I don't know. What do you say, Kevin?
You know, I don't know. It's kind of one of those things that, like, me personally, it would be nice, but at the same time, I, you know, for a Quest, you know, to make things as cheap and easy as possible, they would want to stick with this current Quest as long as they can. Because, you know, then when, say later on, if they do have that upgrade, you know, the Quest 1.5, then they're going to have to start making sure that, you know, games, you know, if something is made specifically for the Quest, then they're going to have to make sure that it works on the original Quest and the upgraded one. And so, you know,
if they do it, I think they'll kind of go like the PlayStation Slim route, where functionally it's not different, but there's, you know, quality of life improvements.
Oh, okay. I mean, in that case, I understand. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was thinking. XR2 is, you know, it's half as many cores, but it does it's purported to be as twice as much performant as the Snapdragon 835, right? So, like, if everything was just all said and done magic wand, which nothing hardware is, but if you could just upgrade to the chipset, you would see battery gains, you'd see performance right. gains, you'd see all this stuff, and maybe better hand tracking.
I gotcha.
Could be. I mean, if they, you know, I'm sure they would make the rule in the store that, you know, you had to target hitting frame rate on the older processor. But if that gave them the additional bandwidth to process hand tracking better and things like that. And I mean, there's a ton of things. It's like I love the Quest. The Quest is one of my favorite headsets ever, but I'm well aware that there are a ton of issues with it. It's front heavy. The strap is terrible. The audio is not fantastic. You know, there's all these different things. You know, the battery life is a little on the lean side. So, I mean, there's a lot of things they could do. For example, if they could make it so that the whole Link process was, you know, built in, the support for Link was built in and thought out from the beginning, that would be great. If they could steal the indexes off your drivers, I think that would be phenomenal. So, I mean, and if they could just make it, make the strap better so that the weight balanced more properly, I think. So, I mean, I could totally see a mid-cycle replacement. And what they could probably do, and looking at what they did with the Rift S, I would be unsurprised if they went this direction, is they could rake in some cost savings by switching from OLED to LCDs on the displays, and use some of that extra cash to upgrade some other things while keeping the same price point, or maybe even bringing it down just a touch.
So yeah, if it's more of like a feature upgrade, you know, instead of a performance, I can absolutely see that. You know, it just of course, you as a company, you know, you're definitely going to want to try and stay away from, you know, coming out with something and then not too long after that coming out with something else and right. kind of leaving everyone else behind and making them feel yeah. that, oh, well, you know, I just spent X amount of money on this and now they want me to go and spend more money on the new greatest and latest.
I think you brought right. up a good thing to talk about on an in-place upgrade is balancing, right? The Quest yes. definitely is front heavy. So if you could upgrade the hardware, if only just to make it a weight reduction, that would be pretty cool. There was a company at CES called Rebuff Reality that
yes.
had a really nice solution by putting a battery pack on the back of the head strap that, I mean, it just perfectly balanced the headset. I was really impressed by that solution. Have you seen anything else, Eric or Kevin, that works well with modifying the Quest?
Yeah, actually I just did the Frankenmod modification where you take a 5 Deluxe audio strap and replace the existing strap on the Quest, and the improvement to comfort was significant, and the improvement to sound quality was massive. I'm a huge fan of it, and I feel stupid for not having done it earlier. You can actually do that if you have a Deluxe audio strap or can get one cheaply. You can do that with a couple of strips of Velcro and an O-ring, and it's about a 5-minute procedure. If you want something that's a little more kind of substantial or significant, there are people online that will 3D print parts that will allow you to snap things together a little more firmly. So I went that route. I got those, but it cost me all of like I think $10. I'll bring it out to the meetup and so on, but. Very happy with the Frankenmod upgrade. The only negative is that those Deluxe audio straps are getting kind of rare in the wild, and they were out of stock completely until about a week ago, but Amazon got a few more back in stock. I mean, they're $100 a pop. They're not cheap. But if you use your Quest all day, every day, like I do, it's a really, really good quality of life upgrade. I've also seen people strap battery packs in the back, much like the Rebuff Reality, but just kind of homebrew. And have been pretty happy with it. I did order the one from Rebuff, and it should be in any day. So I'll definitely talk about it in the next episode.
And so the one from Rebuff, do they suggest like a specific battery pack?
Well, it is its own battery pack. Oh, okay. That is how they counterbalance.
I got you.
Yeah.
They have a line of accessories and stuff that go for the Quest specifically. I think they're just getting into kind of the accessory modding market, and they have a pretty cool protection shell for the Quest and a couple other things that they're working on.
Yeah, they've got some aftermarket equivalents to the Index off your drivers that I'm very excited about, but apparently they're going to do a Kickstarter for those, and they haven't announced a date or a price. But people who tried them at CES, it sounded like they were pretty happy with them. So
like the off-ear driver solution in general is just fantastic because, I mean, the ability to hear your surroundings, not be completely occluded for safety reasons and for hygiene.
Yeah.
I mean, just like, I mean, you guys here, we're all very intimately familiar with sharing our headsets with friends and the public and getting people into VR and just having to deal with hygiene problems day in and day out, it wears the headset down. So having something that sits off the head but gives you that full immersive experience is very intuitive and works really well.
If they can cause it to float off my head in all directions, that would actually be ideal. sort of levitate there.
Original 1960s VR helmet that was.
Yeah.
How much did that thing weigh?
Oh, geez. No, snap your neck. It was ridiculous. But yeah, no, I mean, that's the old school stuff where it actually is attached to a robotic arm to hold it off your head since it's too heavy for your neck.
But it comes with standard with Eric's exotic hand mods.
Thank you. But I like the fact that the deluxe audio strap has that knob in the back that you can turn to tighten things down. And I mean, they use that same basic model for, of course, PSVR and the Rift S.
If they could just figure out how to make controllers that didn't break.
Yeah.
And then the deluxe audio strap you can plug into the Quest, right? It's got the little 3.5 millimeter jack,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, it's got a little one of those little curly retractable wires. It's perfect. That snaps in beautifully. And the sound quality, I mean, it's neat because, you know, you can just pop it in and out and, you know, listen to it on the built-in speakers versus the deluxe audio strap speakers, and I mean the bass immediately jumps up radically, and just the sound quality in general, it reminds you how tinny things sound coming off the Quest speakers. So
are you pro. Still pretty much have your Quest linked to the computer pretty much all day while you work on it?
Well, here's the challenge of developing for the Quest right now, and especially developing for the Quest if you're using hand tracking, which is for the Quest, you can't do the bit where you can leave it chained on there and in Unity just preview it on the headset. You do actually have to build, and it pushes the build over there and then launches it on the headset. So it's connected to the PC all day for that transfer, but it's not streaming the work as I'm doing it, which means that the process is very much a mobile development process. You work on it, you build it, you push it over, and you test it, which could be a slow development cycle. I was tempted to get a Rift S and use that for development, but the trick is that will not, because that does allow that sort of pass-through preview, but they haven't enabled the hand tracking on the Rift S for reasons unknown. Which means that it wouldn't help. Since I'm doing all of my stuff with hand tracking, I'm already having to do stuff that mocks up what the hands are doing so I can do at least some testing on the PC. But anything that actually requires my hands to be tracked, it's got to be pushed to the headset. So I copied over, then I pop the cord loose so I can get up and walk around. But as soon as I sit back down, I plug it in because I'm just going to have to copy the next build over.
Yeah, and that is kind of weird how Oculus is just ever so slightly and slowly pushing the Rift S off into the nether.
Yeah.
It feels like I don't think I ever hear any kind of news about the Rift S. It's all Quest, but you know, which has its good and bad for it. But
yes,
well, I think that's technology in general, right?
Well. Yeah, I get
you have this push for portability. You have this push for
right,
the shrinking of tech, the the miniaturization of the circuitry, the optimization of power usage. I think we're definitely going down the rabbit hole towards a road of tether-free immersive experiences, especially when you're relying on the participant to move around their environment.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're trading a lot for that untethered experience. But frankly, the more time you spend untethered, the more that tether bothers you when you have to plug back in. It is very, very freeing being able to wander around without having to worry about a cable. But
it's from just a development so nice point of to view, have a high fidelity experience. Yeah. I mean, just
it changes it's frustrating. So much. Yeah, it is frustrating trying to hit even 72 frames a second, which is all the Quest asks of you on a mobile processor. I mean, you really have to watch your draw calls and your poly count. If you look at the RAM, it's actually got a respectable amount of RAM. If you look at the CPU, it's surprisingly decent CPU. It's the GPU where, I mean, depending on how you're measuring it, it's somewhere between 7 and 13% of the minimum spec on a PC.
And then the operating system, right? I mean, we're effectively running stripped down versions of Android. I mean, while Android is awesome for smartphones, it's not necessarily custom built for immersive hardware and experiences, right? So we're shoehorning a shoehorn into a shoehorn.
Well, I mean, the good thing about them owning the Quest hardware and having a console like thing is they rolled their own custom build of Android. And you know, Carmack has talked at past events about the fact that they were doing a lot of things to increase reliability and drum the latency out of the system. So thankfully, it's not the misery that is running on stock Android that was like the Gear VR, where events from other things are popping up or thermal throttling's kicking in, stuff like that. So it's definitely better than running on stock Android. But yeah, it's work in progress. So let's talk games.
Yeah, yeah.
What all have you got on the games front, Kevin?
So just some a few little points here. Arizona Sunshine Quest DLC has been ported over the on Quest. It's called Old Mine for Arizona Sunshine, and on that, even if so, the DLC is cross by, but the main game itself is not. So that does at least mean, though, that if you have the game and the DLC on, say, the Quest, I mean the Oculus Rift, and then you buy the main game for the Quest, you'll get all the DLC that was on the Rift for the Quest as it rolls out. Let's see. I think this was 2 days ago. I heard a little announcement that Grand Theft Auto 5 has a VR mod that is pretty much all there. There has been a VR mod out for a good while, but the support for it was not so great. Pretty limited on what it was. None of the menus or anything were really made with the mod in mind, so it was almost unplayable. Well, not really, but you know, certain parts of the menu were off the screen from what you could see. But now with this mod that launched the other day, all that is actually in your view. But sadly, you still have to play it with a gamepad or keyboard and mouse. There's no actual hand tracking support yet. But hopefully we'll see something for that in the future.
I've seen some Twitch streamers playing the GTA 5 VR mod, and they have absolutely loved it. So a lot of good feedback that I've experienced.
Another thing on the PlayStation VR side, if you have PlayStation Plus, this month, one of the free games that you can download is Firewall Zero Hour, which is their first person shooter. So that'll be kind of interesting to see the numbers after, you know, this month and the month after, because there was some push to kind of try and make Firewall 0 Hour as the next kind of big FPS competitive game. So with this being free, and as we've mentioned before, at CES, Sony announced that they have sold over 4 million PlayStation VR headsets. So good job for them.
Yes.
Oh, and actually that reminds me, Eric, we were kind of talking about this just before we started. So maybe you can, if you looked into it a little bit more than I did, Steam came out with some numbers recently saying that they had 1.4 million headsets online consecutively at one time.
Right, within the same month. The figures, I mean, it doesn't necessarily tell you how much is being used, but the fact that it's connected and powered on means it's not sitting in a box somewhere. So, I mean, 1.3, 1.4 million people actually had headsets plugged into the PC, and I don't think that necessarily counts Quest in Link mode. I don't think that's been added in their metrics yet. So hopefully that'll bump it up as well. I mean, that's somewhere, it's like a percent and a half or so of their total user base, which is either a staggeringly low number, I mean, you know, under 2%, or if you consider how huge their user base is and the fact that it spans a huge number of PCs that are not technically capable of VR, a fairly impressive number. And, you know, if you look at the curve over time of headset uptake in Steam's hardware surveys, it's bending upwards. That curve is doing exactly what you want it to do. So each month is gaining more than the previous month, and it's banking up hard. So I think that's all very, very promising.
Another thing to consider is how the Quest Link is still technically in beta, and therefore Steam does not support the Quest in Link mode as a connected headset, and therefore do not report on it yet. So that number is probably underestimating how many headsets are actually being used.
Right, I would suspect so. I mean, you can use the Quest and Link for Steam games, but the fact that it's a beta feature probably means that they're not counting it. And I mean, they're definitely aware that that's what it is. So I'm sure they'll add support for it soon, and we'll start seeing those numbers appear. And I'll be very curious to see them when we do. But I mean, there's just so many signs that VR is doing impressively well. I mean, it took its time getting warmed up. It took its time kind of reaching this point. But as that minimum spec has become easier and easier to reach over time, so more and more people have VR capable machines, and as you get things like the Quest that don't even require a PC, that barrier to entry has gone way down, and the quality of experiences and games has gone way up, and the number of really good games has increased, so it's a lot easier to recommend.
One of the tech comparators that I use a lot is the iPhone, right? It came out in 2007 at a time when arguably handsets were very minimalistic in their feature set. And it still took the iPhone three and a half years before it really started to catch on. And you're really not asking people to do much other than to buy a better phone than what they were already using to access much easier web browsing, much easier things like apps and all that kind of stuff. Whereas you're actually asking quite a bit of someone to adopt immersive tech when they're not used to it being something in their average day to day. So it's really impressive the adoption rate that we've seen, and especially this upturn.
Yeah. And Zuckerberg was on a call with investors recently and was saying that they had almost $5 million in sales on Christmas Day alone in the Oculus store, which, I mean, that's a really impressive number. Obviously, you know, Christmas Day, a lot of people opening brand new headsets and so on, but I mean, that's one day. So I mean, we are starting to reach a point where it makes a lot more sense for developers to jump in and build for VR, because there's getting to be a big enough base there that if you have a pretty good hit, you can make a pretty good living doing it. It's no longer catering to a niche or, you know, kind of losing money to establish reputation and establish yourself in the market.
Right. That Beat Saber was kind of the, you know, shining child on the, yes, the hill for a while there. But Boneworks recently outpaced them to selling 100,000 units. And they, one of the articles I read said that they earned an estimated $3 million in their first week going live.
Yeah, and I'm happy to hear that. I mean, as much as I love Beat Saber and as happy as I am to see its success, I want to see that happening for other titles too. So it's exciting to see that happen. And that's nice, because I mean, Boneworks isn't even available on the Quest, so that's hitting those numbers entirely off of desktop. So that's impressive.
Another thing about numbers, Walmart reported that they have seen over 800,000 of their store associates trained in VR. So it's not just gaming, right? It's really heavy, yeah, use absolutely, case in business, enterprise, and focuses beyond entertainment.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to increase over time, particularly with the rise of the standalone headsets, because that just makes it so much easier for training. It's a hassle when you've got to either drag people to the headsets with the PCs tethered to them, or haul PCs to the training. If you can just throw a bunch of headsets in a duffel bag and go and train up a room full of people, that's fantastic. And I think we're going to see more and more of that.
Absolutely. I mean, there are so many industries that immersive tech, VR headsets, XR headsets, really solve that problem of, hey, I need to train my Air Force pilots on C-130 maintenance. And I've got to buy a $30 million simulator.
Right.
Just to train one to three people at a time on maintenance of this expensive equipment that is mission critical. Or I can deploy it at a fraction of the cost, and I can deploy it literally anywhere in the world. I can make it just drop shipped just in time for a new battalion of recruits. I could do any of those kinds of number of things and make it extremely malleable, adaptable to the needs of the industry, the airline industry in general. Like there's such a need for new pilots. There's so many that are retiring that the simulators that are available out there in the wild are not capable. Even if there were people lining up, you know, back to back to try to train to be a new pilot, they would not be able to train them fast enough to fill the positions that they need, because airlines' demands are growing, right? It's just one industry that's an example of what is necessary for immersive technology to fulfill those needs.
Yeah.
And I mean, with the, you know, even with the higher end headsets like the Vario and so on, I mean, sure, okay, you're spending a few thousand dollars on a headset, but you're replacing simulators that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars,
if not millions.
Yeah, in some cases. So, I mean, it makes a very good business case. And as they're getting proved out, as people are able to demonstrate that training in VR is as effective and in some cases more effective than using other types of simulation or other types of training, those numbers are going to increase. And we're seeing that happen.
Yeah. And, you know, as time goes on, we just constantly see report after report of the fact of in training, the more you actually do it, the better you learn it, instead of just, you know, watching videos, reading books, actually mimicking what you're supposed to do. Like, right, a lot of times it gives people this weird kind of confidence to actually go ahead and do it in the first place, and they'll do it right. You know, and instead of them trying to second guess themselves, you know, their body just kind of will take over at a certain point.
Well, it's a different kind of learning. It's active learning as opposed to book learning or passive learning. You have memories of having done something, which means that it sticks with you better, and you're more likely to do it right. And the metrics are, you know, bearing that out. So I think that's very promising.
Yeah, tactile muscle memory is orders of magnitude stronger and longer lasting memory than anything else that we can experience. So tapping into that in conjunction with visual, in conjunction with auditory, and bringing that all together in a single experience, it's why it's immersive. It's why it's important.
Yeah, exactly. The more senses that you use while learning, you know, obviously the better the outcome is going to be, you know. And I'm not sure if it'll completely replace maybe certain things, you know, like I'm sure I know certain pilots have to do this, as well as, you know, race car drivers. They have a test where basically they put on a helmet that has a blacked out visor, and they have to be able to feel around for their controls, and, you know, and they'll go through safety procedures to say shut down an engine or something like that, you know. And so, yeah, VR won't be able to exactly necessarily get rid of that, but,
right,
you know, that's a very small kind of percentage of thing in the grand scheme of things. So,
yeah, it's definitely going to start by replacing a lot of training that we're going to eventually consider inept, right? Like, there's going to be no reason to have just a video recording of a training and play it on a TV screen in a room. It's going to be some kind of immersive experience. I think eventually with XR, with, you know, the headsets that are coming out, the headsets that exist, like the Vario XR1, giving you the ability to decide how much of your reality is augmented or digital, and mix and match to, you know, 0% to 100%, turn the screen on and off, do what, all those kinds of fun things. We're going to get to a point where the majority of training will be capable of happening in immersive. It's just going to be a stair-step process, and it's going to take time.
Yep. So, also, but before we kept on going, one thing that I wanted to jump back to, again, because I'm super excited about it. Half-Life Alyx, has yes, been reported that it's basically done, and they're just kind of in a polish stage right now. So everything is still looking good for it coming out next month.
I won't make any Valve time jokes.
Valve time. and another little bit of news that we keep on seeing is headsets are still apparently partially out of stock. Oculus website is out of stock. Valve Index is out of stock on their website. There's been some reports here and there. I have seen them kind of come back to Best Buy. Josh, you said some other places they've been popping up. Micro Center?
Yeah, I saw Micro Center had one for, I think, a day, and then they were out of stock. Also, I'm pretty sure the Vario is selling the XR1 headsets faster than they can produce them, too. There's a huge demand for their headsets.
I mean, it's an inconvenience when you need these headsets on short notice, but it's exactly the kind of problem you want the industry to have, is people want it, you know, at a pace that's faster than you can produce it. So I think that's, I don't know, it warms my heart every time I hear it's out of stock. And I hope it's out of stock because of high demand, not because of, you know, production issues or anything like that. So
at least that's what all the reports are saying.
That's what they all claim. But I mean, it seems to cross multiple headsets, so I think it's probably true.
I definitely, all the things that I've seen have been, it's just the demand is so high for all the different kinds of headsets. Although I will say, going into the next couple of months, we might see kind of a backlog building because of the epidemic with the coronavirus and all that kind of stuff hurting the global supply chain.
Right. I mean, we just passed Chinese New Year, which means that a lot of the supply stuff shuts down for an entire month. So, I mean, yeah, there's all sorts of things that could factor into it. Although, I imagine at least some of the pressure is coming off. I'm assuming that there was extremely high demand in advance of Christmas for people wanting things for Christmas presents. So maybe that'll ease off a little bit. But frankly, the longer it can be, demand outstripping supply, the better, because that's building that user base. And the bigger that user base is, the better it is for developers, so they can produce bigger and better games and experiences, which in turn make the platform more interesting and more desirable. We talked a little bit about the hand tracking earlier, and the fact it's the version 13 firmware update for the Oculus Quest that does the hand tracking by default. You can actually trigger that now. Thank goodness. In 12, they added the ability to go in. If you go under settings and about, you can see what software version you're running. 12 was the last major release. 13 is in the process of rolling out. But if you want it ahead of your slot in line, you can go in there and click the download button. It'll download in the background. When it's done, it'll pop up a thing saying, when you get a chance, reboot. And when you reboot, it'll kick in. If you're set up for sideloading, which is really easy, you kick it into developer mode and then you just set up a few things on your PC. There's a piece of software called SideQuest that makes it relatively easy. And once you've got that set up, extremely easy to sideload software. And while Oculus is not allowing software that does hand tracking into the Oculus store yet, there's quite a few items that are out there, mostly kind of, you know, demo items, but a few games that do the hand tracking if you want to experiment with that. I've tried T for God. They have the latest update of T for God has hand tracking, and it's pretty good. It's a little bit, I mean, there's usability issues, you know, when you're, for example, shooting a gun, you point your finger like, you know, the barrel of a gun, and then you use your middle finger to pull the trigger. And because of occlusion issues, sometimes it can't see that middle finger pulling very well. I think they should have given in and just let you use your thumbs as the triggers, even though that's less realistic. But it would be the traditional pew, pew, pew that people do anyway. And I'll warn that T for God does not hit frame rate. So if you're sensitive to that, it's unpleasant. But it gives you a lot of grist for trying out gestures, because it's very, very gesture based. In fact, it pops up a page of, I think, like 15 gestures for you to learn at the beginning, which is daunting, but interesting.
And just to throw out there, we have put as much time as we possibly can into trying things out, but we would absolutely love to hear back from any of y'all out there listening, what you've tried, what you've experienced, what your thoughts are on hand tracking. If you've tried sideloading any of these new experiences, probably by the time this comes out, there'll be updates to T for God and other types of experiences like it. Let us know, because we would definitely like to feed that back into this community-driven podcast.
Yeah, by all means, let us know things that you've tried and liked, or tried and hated, or things you haven't gotten to try that you'd like us to give a crack at. And of course, give us feedback on the format and the content. We're always looking to make things better over time. So just talk to us. We appreciate the feedback.
I think we should plan for at some point having a get together in VR chat or something like that with
fans
of the podcast, and get a dialogue going. Are there events that you guys have experienced that, you know, have garnered your attention, things that you're looking forward to either in VR or in RR, real reality?
Well, yeah, so another thing about the Quest update is the Quest 13 update, in that they actually are starting to give more support for events and actually making parties with your friends, seeing who's interested in events. And so I think that will also, you know, something that's kind of been lacking when it comes to people really adopting VR. You know, a lot of things we hear is it just feels very secluding. And so with these events and more events becoming more social in VR, I think is really going to help that. But so one of the events that I checked out not too long ago was the Video Game Award. They actually streamed that. It was interesting. You could definitely tell that the Video Game Awards are really meant for broadcast TV, not so much for the actual audience that was there. But it was kind of neat though, because you actually were set in some parts that a lot of the audience, the general audience, wouldn't actually get to experience. For the most part, you were kind of off to the right side of the stage, up close. So there were a couple times where when someone would win an award, you know, it maybe they were just five seats away, you know, and they get up and go up there. So that is kind of neat that you're actually that close to, you know, these big people in the industry. And kind of like I mentioned, it's a little bit different than the average audience. When the host was speaking, he was actually up on this little platform off to the left side of the stage, like kind of completely on his own, and actually facing away from the crowd for the most part. So if anyone wanted to actually watch him while he was speaking, because he's up on that platform looking straight at a camera that's being broadcast. So I don't know why, but for some reason they were not playing the video up on the screens that they had over the stage for the audience.
Huh.
So for the most part, people just had to sit there and look at this empty stage while he was talking. But people in VR, anytime he was talking, it would switch from the camera over on the right side of the stage, or over by the right side of the stage, basically right to where he was. You were basically like another broadcast camera right there, kind of at his side. So even then, you were still seeing something a little different than what was being broadcast out to the, you know, online and everything. So that was kind of neat, kind of being in the audience and actually being able to look around, where, you know, obviously you can't do that on a broadcast.
You mean I could All have right. been on stage with J-Lo and Shakira at the halftime show?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't catch the big screen broadcast of the Super Bowl. I should have, just to see how it was, but I...
Next year.
Right. We'll get there. We'll definitely get there.
But
all right. Well, I think we're coming up right on an hour here, so we might kind of push things till the next episode. We're talking about doing a deep dive into pass-through AR, which we're starting to see a number of headsets, the Vario XR1, the Canon, the Lynx. So it's becoming a market segment, and we're going to kind of dive in and talk about what's good, what's bad, what are we looking forward to, what do the time frames look like. If you have topics you want us to cover, by all means, please reach out.
Absolutely. And definitely, I want to throw out a couple quick things, because I'll probably be overseas during our next broadcast. I'll probably have to miss that one. But we've, as I said before, we're definitely a community-driven group. We do as much as we can to help build community and build awareness for immersive tech and all the things it can do for everybody. So I believe all of us here are involved with helping an event here happen in Houston called the XR Showdown. It's kind of a hackathon style event where it's going on for 6 weeks, where it'll give college students and recent graduates the opportunity to solve unique challenges in the real world using XR solutions. And it's hosted by ExxonMobil, so they're bringing all the challenges to the forefront for these guys to solve. And it should be some really interesting things coming out of it. They'll be live streamed onto Twitch, I believe on YouTube, and it should eventually end up on Amazon Prime as well. So it'd be a really cool thing to check out. And then also, if anybody is thinking about or is possibly attending South by Southwest, I'll be hosting the XR Developers Meetup there, and would love to have anybody that wants to come meet face-to-face and talk about what you're doing in the industry and what your aspirations are and what you need to be more successful. I'd love to have a chat with you.
Excellent.
We're always open for people who want to contact us. That's for sure.
Thanks, guys.
Always enjoy it. Talk to you guys next time.
Yep. See y'all then.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Virtually Relevant. If you liked it, please consider rating and reviewing us on your favorite podcast app. It helps bring us up in the charts and makes it easier for people to find us. If you'd like to support Houston VR and this podcast, please consider becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/HoustonVR. Until next time, thanks for listening.